Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany. It is my complete joy and honor to introduce today's guest, Dr. Helen Young. Dr. Helen Young is an advocate for community college students. Young has been a counselor and administrator within the community college district for years. She's been a part of a program that supports community college students to get guaranteed admissions into historically Black colleges and universities. This was another conversation where as soon as we hopped on to chat with each other, it just felt right. It felt like coming home. It felt like just talking to someone that I have somehow knew for years. She has such a beautiful energy, and I am so excited to share this conversation. We really talk about everything from the vision of the child to why community colleges are such important spaces for the community. This conversation is just really incredible. I'm excited to share it with you. So let's hop into it. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today, I am joined by the fabulous Dr. Young. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Brittany. It's just my absolute joy to be here today.
Oh, I am so excited to have you on. I know you have such like a beautiful background in education, especially working with students getting into HBCUs. But before we get there, I want to know about how you got your start in education.
Oh my gosh. My start in education probably really began to blossom about 30 years ago. I wasn't the greatest student. I didn't have a lot of confidence as a student. I didn't perform well in high school as a student and didn't really think I was college material. We've encountered so many students and colleagues who probably have echoed the same story. But for me, it was an older siblings that did really well, and just I didn't perform well in high school. So I just thought, I'll just get a job. I'll just work. But my mother, who has passed on, just was such a believer in all five of her children. And the one thing she kept saying is, no, you can do this. You just have to believe in yourself. You have to get in there and you got to make some things happen. So about a year and a half after working, and I mean working, after high school and working jobs where I was working, I said, maybe I should try this college thing and create some different opportunities for myself. Started off at Dominguez Hills. Didn't do very well. Again, first gen, my parents didn't go to college. All they knew was they wanted for us to have a better experience than they had, but just really didn't understand how to navigate those systems, right? And so didn't do really well, ended up flunking out or being asked to withdraw for a while. Went to a community college, figured out how to get myself together, came back to Cal State Dominguez Hills, got involved in the EOPNS program. And Brittany, that's what saved me. And so started performing very well, doing very well, and got focused and got surrounded by people who really cared. And so it began to help me become motivated. Met a great man who I'm married to for almost 40 years now, who was also one of my motivating factors. And so he really believed and pushed, and just one thing kind of led to another. But it was one of my first jobs after finishing my undergraduate degree. My undergrad degree is in human services, which is the next door to social work. Brittany, I started working in that first job after graduating, and I hated it. I hated it. I came home. I told my husband, I said, I can't do this. This is not the future that I envisioned for myself. And so he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. He said, well, then you better get figuring it out. And I literally started hunting. Back in the day, we used the newspaper to hunt for jobs. And I just started hunting for jobs. And I literally landed at a job at a private university here in the LA area that does no longer exist. It focused in on aviation, and I became a recruiter. And once I became a recruiter, I met college counselors. And in my head, I kept thinking, this is a job? You mean they pay you to do this, to be with students, to guide students? all the things that I didn't get when I was a student, because I was that kid that was just squeaking by, really no attention. You know, I wasn't at the bottom and I wasn't at the top. So that middle band of us who just kind of pushed through, I really didn't understand that this was a job. And so the more I kept going out to recruitment events and talking to counselors, what do I need to do? I realized this was it. So my husband supported me. I went back to college. I finished my master's and then got involved as a high school counselor, my first job in East LA. And I was a counselor for a group of girls at a Catholic high school. And I knew it. I knew it, Brittany. I knew I'd found my thing. And so I did that for about 10 to 15 years. And then our own family started to grow. We have two sons, adult sons now, but our own family started to grow. And I said, you know, I need to spend more time with my kids, because I had become the assistant vice principal at a Catholic high school in Santa Monica at that point. I kind of rose through the ranks really fast. I loved my job. I loved my work. And I guess it showed. And so I realized I was spending a lot of time at work, coming home late. My boys were missing me. And so I said, you know, I need to make some shifts. I need to make some changes. And as God will provide, just went out on faith. I said, I'm out. And I had a girlfriend a couple of years later, as my boys were getting old enough to start elementary school. I said, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's next. And a girlfriend of mine, literally, whose son was on the same basketball team as the team my husband was coaching for our kids, said, why don't you come do some part-time work at the community college? And I thought, yeah, okay. And so she says, you have your master's? I said, I do. She said, well, your counseling background? I have. That's what I do. And so she ended up creating the door of opportunity for me. And once I started working in community college, it was even more crystal clear for me. This is my niche, not just counseling, but counseling this population of students. And it was just my thing. It's been my thing now for almost 25 years. And I absolutely loved it. And so that just happenstance, you know, meant to be, all of whatever somebody might want to perceive it as. But I think it was preparation met with opportunity. And I was able to step through that door.
There were so many beautiful elements. Like, I'm just captivated. Forgot I was recording a podcast. I was like, yes. But there were so many really beautiful elements of your story. Like you said, there were these moments of serendipity, moments of just preparation of every step of the way, right? You were prepared to take that next leap. But especially in the beginning, when you were talking about how you got your start in this, right? And how education was not your jam for the for the first couple of years, right?
That education found me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I love those stories when education finds you.
Yeah. It was
love
great.
That happened.
Yeah, me too.
And it's so common that students feel that, right? I remember part of my mission in life, like I hear this from young students of like, oh yeah, education in school just wasn't for me. You know, it wasn't something that was good with my soul. Like, it just wasn't for me. And I was like, but that's what it is for. It's supposed to be for you. in our education system now, it's not for everyone, or it's not for every student. It's kind of one size fits all. And if you can't fit in that box, then
sorry,
sucks for you.
That's right.
Sorry.
That's right.
You know,
right. You're absolutely right.
I refuse to believe that that is education. I refuse to believe it. No, thank you. Education is for everyone. Right. And there's ways that we can adjust the box for people to fit in it, right?
Absolutely.
Do we even need the box at all?
Throw it the box. I say, that's the only way the box.
The box sucks. Okay. Just get rid of the whole box. Throw the whole thing in the trash.
You know, because what you're often asking young people is to become a square in a round peg, right? And education, it doesn't allow for that brilliant mind to think out of the box, right? To say, when our kids are little, you know, I remember my sons asking me why, especially my oldest son. He asked why all the time. And so why can't they ask why? Why shouldn't they ask why? If this doesn't make sense to them, they are the most astute group that we should be listening to. They're receiving the product. And if they're telling us the product is screwed up or jacked up, then we need to be taking care of the product a little bit better.
We do. And, you know, my background's in early childhood, and they will tell you.
They'll
tell you no.
They will tell you in a hot second.
yeah, in a hot this second. Sucks. You will know.
I don't want to
like,
do
I don't like this.
I don't like yep. this.
And I'm like, valid point. It's like, I get it. And I think that is the beauty of education. I think, especially when we talk about young children come to us with so much fire, so much energy, so much in them, right? It's our role as educators to help them maintain that fire, to help them have the tools to and the opportunities, right? To do what their inner fire is telling them to
Absolutely.
Do, right?
Absolutely.
You know, have a nice control burn, but...
Absolutely.
You know, so their fire's not running rampant in the world, but like, okay, let's, how do we, what do you do with this, right?
Absolutely.
Like, our job is not to douse that fire, right? And Absolutely. So oftentimes, we give kids messages time after time after time that to dampen your fire, you're too loud, you're right. too much, you ask too many questions, you play too rough, you do this, you do that, right? And Absolutely. All of these messages dampen their Absolutely. Fire. And then once they get to that K-12 system, right, they've already learned.
You've broken them.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, they're thoroughbred horses, right? So if you think about kids as thoroughbred horses, the last thing you want to do is to break that thoroughbred spirit, because that's the energy that gets them across those finish line. And if you can just somehow bridle what that horse is walking into that stable with, you don't want to kill it. You just want to take care of it so that, as you said, it can last as long as they need it to last. It can help to spark other fires. I love your idea that these are controlled burns, right? Just little controlled burns. That's all we're here to do. But what a beautiful analogy, right? That you don't want to douse that. We want your embers to glow, but we just want to make sure that, no, you know. And I just often think about young people being these thoroughbred horses that we break them so early, they're never any good. They're never any good. And so it becomes tragic when you see all of this untapped, undeveloped potential in spirit and intelligence. It's quite frustrating.
It's quite frustrating.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing that, and I've recently started teaching kind of at the community college level, and there's something beautiful about the community college. I love it.
Good. I'm so
glad. I love it.
Yes.
I love the energy of it. I'm like, no, I want to be here. I want to be here forever. I don't care about the academia. Nah. I want this. This is for my
This works for me. This works for me.
This works for me. I want more of this. And there's just something really beautiful about community colleges and what they offer. You know, I went to community colleges straight out of high school.
And okay.
Initially, I felt so much shame around it, because initially it was just like, my friends are going to the UCs. They're going to the state colleges. They're doing things. And Absolutely. Here I am just taking my little community college class. But when I look back on that time, it was pivotal for me. I got to take so many classes that I probably wouldn't have been able to afford to take at the university level. I took a Shakespeare class just because.
Just because.
You know, just because.
Absolutely.
And it was so much fun. I made so many great friendships and connections, and my class sizes were so much smaller than my friends' class sizes. Absolutely. And I was hearing they have like 100 people. It's like 200 people in my class. Like,
come on now.
Professor doesn't know my name. And I'm
That's
like,
it. That's it.
There's
That's
like
it.
8 people in one of my classes.
And just think about taking that class also began to help to inform Brittany and who Brittany is, right? And the impact that literature can have on our understanding of the world, of people's actions and thoughts, right? When you just follow that straight line and you don't get an opportunity to take that class just because, oh, you know, this might be interesting, you may miss out on so many things, right? Mm-hmm. And so that opportunity that you had to take that class, there's probably moments in your life where you're comparing what is happening to what you remember in that class. Those pieces that you were learning from, and you're probably thinking, wow, it's making sense, right? And that's the power of those opportunities.
It is. And it's a funny story you mentioned that, because that's exactly what happened. I took that Shakespeare class. I learned all about, you know, Hamlet's my favorite play. I learned about Othello. And then I took another class, you know, once I got into my bachelor's program, and I had to connect social justice to an art form. And I used plays and I used Othello to connect that, right? Like, what's happening
with
Black boys in schools is like what we saw in Othello, right? Every day, Othello is this decorated veteran, right? Decorated war general. He's really good. He's really charismatic. He's a overall, everyone loves him.
Oh,
his
gosh.
One downside.
Yes.
He's a Black man.
He's a Black man.
He's a Black
Come
man.
Come on now. Come
and
on
you
now.
Tell someone time after time after time after time after time again. You tell someone they're bad, that they're evil, that they're going to do bad things. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. Begin to manifest.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And it connected those two things. And so you're so right. I took that Shakespeare class just on a whim, just like, I need an extra class. Why not? And it informs so much of how I think about education, and it informs so much of how I think about even the professors that I had during that time, right? The way they taught the classes was so much different than the way that I've seen other classes be taught. And it informs the way that I now teach, my college classes.
Absolutely. And just think, if you were at a four-year university where you were concerned about cost, and you might have said, no, I can't even afford to take that class. I'm on the straight and narrow. Mom and dad have made it very clear that I need to, you know, listen, I'm guilty of it. My sons, we made it very clear 4 years in and out, you know, get on this grind and get in and get out. But looking back, I think we may have done them a disservice. There was no time for discovery. And that's the beauty of the community college, that there is time for discovery, right? Now, there's students that you and I know show up, older adults, or they're on a mission. And that's cool. You know, if they've got a game plan and then got a road that they need to complete, absolutely, we're there to help them to do that. But there's also this opportunity for self-discovery, right? That, you could pick up a class here or there that you normally may not have even entertained if you were at the four-year institution.
It's so true. So now whenever I talk to young people, you know, they're like applying to colleges and they're trying to figure it out. And I'm like, you know, do what feels right for you. Sometimes going to a big university is, you know, what feels right for you. You get to the chance to go to another, you know, city, go to another state that you might not have been able to do before. So like, there's opportunities there for you, right?
Gotta find the right,
find the right fit. But like, if you're going into college and you have no idea what you want to study, you have no idea what you want to do, and you're just like, I have to go to college because this is what I'm told to do next. Try out community college.
Absolutely.
There is no shame in it. You get to try new things. You still get community. You still get connections. You get so many resources, so many diverse perspectives that you may not have been exposed to before. Like, the people need to stop hating on community colleges. They're great. That's my PSA.
And I endorse you 100%.
Endorsed by Dr. Yang.
That's
go.
Right. There you go. That's it.
And so, kind of shifting gears a little bit, I know there's a lot of your work that you do kind of getting pathways for, you know, transfer students from either community college and getting them transferred into HBCUs.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit more about your inspiration behind that and the work that you do with this?
Oh, maybe it's been about 10, 11 years ago when I was at the community college working the transfer center director. I worked right here at West LA Community College, about 10 minutes from where I live. And I was blessed enough to be the transfer center director. And one of the things that I was looking to develop, build, figure out was how to create opportunities to HBCUs. Now, I'm not an HBCU graduate. I don't even have that in my background, but I just knew as a Black woman, as an African-American woman, trying to really serve my students, my population, that I needed to become better educated about these institutions and what they might mean as opportunities for students, particularly my Black and Brown students. And so I started asking around, talking to colleagues, and I happened to learn about this woman who was over at El Camino College. Her name is Elaine Moore, and she was then one of the first really developers, that's what I'm going to call her, creators of transfers with HBCUs. And she's recognized and had been recognized by the state and our system as kind of the guru to building those. And so summed up the courage to contact her and said, listen, I'm a novice at this, but I really am interested in trying to figure out how to build some pathways. I understand that you've been doing it, you know. And so she said, look, I got about a year left. I'm going to retire. So if you want to come and learn, come and meet me, have lunch with me, have dinner, da 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 da. We'll meet periodically and I'll give you everything I know. And so I said, I'm coming. And so she and I started spending time together. I would go to her office once a week and I would spend like an hour and a half, and I just would soak up everything she could tell me. How to do this, how to do that. And in that time period, our state chancellor's office put out a RFP to solicit proposals from districts or campuses who wanted to build statewide pathways. And so as I was beginning to kind of hone my craft as transfer center director, working with Ms. Moore, I said, well, let me see if I can put a group of people together out of my district, because I was part of LACCD, the 9 college district here in the Los Angeles area. And I said, let me see if I can pull together some colleagues and we can't write our own proposal. Well, at the same time, Elaine Moore and the team at El Camino was writing one as well. And so I said, okay, well, let's go ahead and let's see what happens. So I'm not sure how many proposals they received at the chancellor's office, but unfortunately, my team, we didn't get it. But Elaine's team at El Camino, they did. They won the proposal. They received the grant to start this project. But I had been working with her already. She knew how intense I was committed to this idea of building these partnerships. She said, I want you to be on our team. You have what I'm looking for. She says, and I just think you're the right person to join our team. And I was like, heck yeah, you couldn't tell me no. I was like, yes, when am I going to be there and how am I going to be there? And so she really took me under her wing and took me in and helped me to learn and grow in real practice, because I was able to take what she had been giving me in theory and concept, and now I was able to put it into practice. And so I get emotional thinking about her because she's such an important part of my journey. And so she did about a year and a half as the project leader, administrator of the project. And so her husband finally said to her, you need to really retire. And so she had retired, come out of retirement to do the project with El Camino. And so her husband said, no, you need to really retire now. And so she said, listen, I need to step down, but I want you to become the project director. She says, you've earned this spot. This should be yours. And so God's grace, I got the position. And so I led the project for the next 5 years as a project director. We went from an initial 9 HBCUs as partner institutions to now, in my time, we went to 39. Wow. So we grew over 5 years quite a bit. Unfortunately, when the pandemic hit, we struggled and suffered like everybody else, but we have maintained a little over 33 of those partnerships through that pandemic, you know, coming out of that pandemic period of 2019, 2020 into now into 2025. So about 3.5, almost 4 years ago, I stepped down as the project director and became the assistant project director as my kind of preparing to retire as well, and was able to snag a young lady who had been with the team already as our partnership relations coordinator. And my commitment to her was I would stay another 5 years. I'm in my 4th year now, and I would mentor her until she could kind of take the helms, and she's doing her fantastic job. Her name is Dr. Erin Azut Settle. And that was my commitment, is to make sure that the project would continue with its growth and its development and just to be there. So next year will be 10 years of this project and just really doing this amazing work to create these transfer opportunities for students.
That is truly incredible work. And again, as a part of your journey, just those preparation times that lead you into those moments of where you can take action, where you can say, okay, I'm ready to take this. I have been prepared to take this opportunity.
Yes.
That seems to be a theme, and I love it.
Yeah, you know, I believe in luck. I think people can have great luck, because when I go to Vegas, I have no luck. I never win anything. So I do believe that there's some level of luck. But I also believe that luck is also a piece of what you talked about, is being prepared so that when those opportunities open up, you can step through those doors. Because I think opportunities knock, but they don't knock all the time. But if they knock and you're not prepared, it's no guarantee that that knock is going to come again. There's no guarantee. So your job and our job is to not only be prepared, but to help to prepare those other young people or those individuals that we work with, and to understand that concept that, yes, there's luck out there, but there's also preparation needing opportunity, and that it's important for you to do your part so when those moments show up, you can walk through.
Yes.
That is such a key part.
Right.
Dr. Young, just dropping life knowledge on us now.
Thank you.
But what does, from a student perspective, what does being a part of this program look like?
It's really very simple. It's not a complicated transfer pathway at all. Students at any California community college can take advantage of this pathway. All they simply need to be able to do is complete a minimum of 30 transferable, what we refer to as CSU, UC transferable units, mm-hmm. a and then also meet a minimum of whatever the GPA requirement is for that HBCU. For the majority of our partner schools, 2.0 is all a student needs minimally to meet transfer requirements. We do not recommend that they stay at the 2.0 level because it doesn't mean opportunity for money, right? We always tell them money comes with grades, whether we like it or not, that's just the reality of the system. And so we encourage them to academically perform well so that they can potentially earn more dollars in their academic pursuits. So that is simply it. The student needs to meet a minimum number of units, which is 30. And then the other option, if a student says, well, what if I complete a degree? One of the degrees options in the California Community College is the associate's degree for transfer. We like to call it the ADT. And these were degrees that were developed, oh gosh, maybe about 15 years ago in connection and in concert with the CSUs, the California State University System. And these were designed to do exactly what they do with our partner schools, create these pathways where there's no waste of units and there's no waste of time. So there's exactly 60 units that they complete in that two-year community college AA degree work. They transfer to that four-year school, specifically the CSU, and they have another 60 units to complete that bachelor's or that matching bachelor's to their AA. So if a student says, I want to get an AA in music and I want to transfer to CSU Northridge and finish that music degree, and if that's identified by Northridge as a match degree, then they can transfer and finish that degree in 60. We've done the same exact thing with the HBCUs. So what we've allowed the HBCUs to do is identify, I think now we have over 40 ADTs. And so they get to select the ones that they think are the most viable matches or maybe programs that they're trying to build, whatever it is, they get to identify those ADTs. And then we solidify that through what we call our MOUs, our Memorandums of Understanding. And so it's a lot of work. Brittany, it's a lot of work. But it's so satisfying because what it ends up happening is a student then is on a better pathway to completion. And so we try to do our best to make sure that the student is in the best opportunity for success. And we believe this is one of the ways that we can do that is to build these pathways based on degrees and then should transfer over and finish that degree at that four-year HBCU.
Yes, yes, yes.
So real simple. Nothing heavy for them to do.
You're already in school. You're already doing it.
You're already
probably going to transfer.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the statistical pieces of the data for California Community College, over 70% of the students who graduate from a CSU started at a California Community College. 51% of all students who graduate from a UC started at a California Community College. So our handprints are all over this system, right? Through the state and our higher ed system. 70% of all Black students, particularly male students, start their education in California at a California community college. So we know the power of this system, who we serve, and what we should be doing to ensure the success. And pathways like this help to do that because the average age of a student at a California community college is 26. That's not a kid. That's somebody with life experience, probably has kids, a husband, a wife, a partner, grandparents, parents at their care. This is somebody who is living a full life. I think to understand that is so important that who we serve is this person who's got a real specific thing that they're trying to complete and to create these pathways for them so they're not trying to figure it out on their own, that they can literally follow this yellow brick road right over to the wizard and into, you know, La La Land, it makes a big difference. It really makes a big difference.
It does. It does. And I'm thinking about those students who are starting their college and starting their academic career and discovering what they love, discovering what they like.
Absolutely.
And not even knowing that they have opportunities at an HBCU, right? Absolutely. Not even knowing that, oh, I can go there and I can transfer my degree over there. Absolutely. And I can study this over there too. It just opens those pathways, that communication students might not even have known that they had.
Right. Right. And you and I probably have encountered in our careers hundreds of those young people. They didn't. They didn't have a clue. To me, one of the most important pieces, I know you asked in some of those pre questions that you sent me, I think that one of the most important things for us to be is informed. And as parents and educators, we are obligated to ensure that folks are informed. Be a resourceful, I think, is another piece. But if you don't inform them, how can they learn how to be resourceful?
I'm going to let that marinate for a second.
Right? Yep. Think about that. I don't teach you how to fish. You won't fish. But if I help you understand all of the things about the pole, the bait, you can start to pull that together and understand, I got this. I know how to fish now. I don't even need you to take me out to the lake anymore. I know how to string my fish. I know how to do all that, my bait, and I can do all of that, and I can throw it out, and I can come home with loads of fish. So to me, if you don't have information, just you're very doomed.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of the parents out there who are kind of thinking about their student, right? They might have a middle school, high school age student.
Absolutely.
And maybe they didn't go to college themselves and they don't know what that process looks like and they don't know how to support their student throughout this process. You know, they're kind of always at the top of my mind. How can parents and supportive adults, how can they be supportive to students, especially if their student is going to be a first generation college student? What
Absolutely.
Can they do? Either that process leading up to them looking at colleges, you know, being curious about college, you know, what can they do? What can they start?
You know, I think one of the most important things to do is ask questions, asking your teachers, teachers at their schools, what opportunities are available for my son or daughter right now? What kind of opportunities, educational enrichment, what things can they be involved with? What can I do as a parent to support them as a student? What are the obligations I should be taking on? I work two jobs. I'm going to school myself. Whatever it is you're doing, I think the priority still has to be supporting your child through that experience because you can't go back. Once they're past that, you can't go back and fix it. And so I think really trying to become a partner with your K through 12 educators, being a champion for your son or daughter, good and bad. But being a champion for your kid and really being the loudest cheerleader in the room, being the loudest cheerleader in the room. You've got to be able to say at the end of the day, I did everything I could within reason, right? I did everything I could because no parent wants to look back and think, I blew that. And I'm sure there's parents out there that probably do. But the most that you can do, become a partner with your school, cheerleader for your kid, right? And then now, given the age that we're living in with this thing called the internet, there is no reason why parents shouldn't be able to find resources and opportunities for their kids. There's no reason, Brittany. There's just no reason. And so I contend if you can start modeling that behavior that you want your child to be able to exercise, you got to do it first. So things like, well, you want to do baseball? Let's do some research. Let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the stats. Let's look at whatever it looks like. You want to be an engineer? Let's start doing some research. Let's look at some stats. Let's start making connections in the community. I think if you start to use these kind of ideas of becoming partners with folks who can help your son or daughter make those opportunities happen, if you can find those resources to develop skills and interests and knowledge, just those three things. If we can get parents to just do those three things initially, champion of your son or daughter, good or bad, right? Even when the kid blows it, you still want to be a champion. Take care of what's ever happening, champion it, you know, partner at the school and helping them to develop the level of research or just looking for resources, right? You model that, you start to develop that. They will take it over. They will. I believe it. I believe it. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I know about working with young children is when they have the tools and the opportunities, like they will, you give them a framework and they will run with it.
They will.
Gladly.
Absolutely.
They're like, oh, I have something to work within. Amazing.
I got this.
You know?
Yeah.
I got this.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, another thing that I've known from working with 2-year-olds is all people just kind of want to be seen, heard, and validated. That goes for not just 2-year-olds. That goes for every age. Everyone just wants to be seen, heard, and validated. And their concerns to be heard. It's a confusing and rough time, especially
Absolutely.
That those high school years are so hard. And you think about those last 2 years, there's a lot going on that they're considering and thinking about. And friendships are shifting and changing. Like they're in their adolescence now. And that's a tricky time. it just is. Adolescence
is.
Hard. We always talk about the teenage years, but that just the entire adolescence, the whole thing. It's a lot. And, you know, considering college and considering there's a lot of pressure there, especially young people think that I have to decide what I'm going to do for the rest of my life right now. You don't have to. You're allowed to change. You don't. You're allowed to change. I went into college thinking I was going to go into pre-med, and here I'm a teacher.
Wow. So
life changes. Life finds a way. You will find where you need to be.
And I would suggest that, you know, as we think about parents in this idea of supporting your child, be flexible with your kids. If you say, I just want you to live a happy life, then maybe a happy life is them not becoming a doctor. It's what you want, but it may not be what they want. So it's real important to listen to your kids. Hear them. Really study your child, your son or daughter, so that you can figure out, how do I help them to live out their dream and not my dream? Because maybe my whole life was I wanted to do this and it never happened. So I'm going to put all of this on my kid. No, not fair, not right, not right at all. Let them live out their dream. You're there to help to facilitate that. I'm with you 100%. Allow our babies the opportunity to say, no, I don't like this. I'm going to try something else. Okay.
Try something else.
Explore. Allow them opportunities to fail, then reason. But
amen.
They got to fail so that they know what works, what doesn't work. Like they just have to have those opportunities. I think we care for these kids so much and we want them to be great. We want them to have everything that we didn't have and more.
And more. Yeah.
And I think partially sometimes that means that we might not let them take risks and might not let the opportunity to fail. But that's how we learn. That's how we grow. That's how we find out who we are in the context of everything else that's going on.
Amen.
It's a part of that process, right? And so, you know, you might think, oh, my kid wants to study art, but there's no money in art. They're going to be, you know, sad and broke for the rest of their lives. But there are plenty of artists that make way more money than a doctor, right?
Absolutely.
There are plenty of artists that go out there and make a difference in this
every
world.
Day.
You know, we need art. We need artists of all kinds and all types, right? And that kind of makes our world more beautiful when we have artists of all these different types, right? Think about our photographers and the work that they have done throughout generations, just documenting.
Absolutely.
The world and how things shifted and documenting social issues. So there's so much beauty in that. And so being able, like you said, to be flexible and to see things a little bit differently and to hear them out and see what direction they're going in that, right? I tell the story all the time, but when I was in the third grade, I had a great, great teacher. And I said from that moment, I was like, I want to be a teacher when I grow up. And, you know, I had so many adults tell me, you don't want to be a teacher. They don't make any money. Like, pick something else. And age, I don't make any money. But they weren't wrong.
Right.
I still became a teacher anyway, so.
Right. In spite of.
In spite of, okay. Education told me to.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think at some point, you have to decide what you value. Some people value money. Now, with no judgment, it is what it is. But some people value something else, right? Or other things. Mm-hmm. I know my youngest sister is a brilliant lawyer. She has been working in political arenas with her law degree for many, many years. But it is clear what my sister values is travel. So she works in order to travel, to see the world, see cultures, see people, right? And we tease her all the time. I said, where are you going next? What's your next flight? What's your next adventure? But she also taught that to her daughter, right? And her daughter has this sense of adventure. So people will tell you what they value if you watch them long enough, right? And if your child is somehow in discourse because what you're trying to guide them to or force them to is not naturally what they're drawn to, you might have to step back and take a look. You might have to reconsider what you're laying out to them. It may not be the authentic pieces that they're looking for to really be who are they developing into who they are. You don't want to develop a young person who 20 years from that point is saying, I hate my life. This is never what I wanted. This is not how I saw my life unfolding, that I wanted to be that artist, you know, and contribute in a different way to society. And not that making $250,000, $300,000 as a doctor or lawyer isn't profitable. But you may not be happy. And I'll be honest. I don't know about you, Brittany, but when I go to the doctor or see I want them to like their jobs.
Yes. I want them to like their job.
Because if I got to go under the knife or anything else, I don't want anybody who's unhappy.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Can you get me another one?
Is there another doctor in the house? You're right.
Yeah.
You know? But
and I think we've all kind of seen that too with
absolutely
when you interact with other people. Like I've seen educators in the classroom and I'm like, I don't
why are you here?
Job.
Why are
I don't think
here?
You like it here. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen doctors where we just had those interactions with people and it's like, you don't want to be here, you know? And I've been in places where I've been in jobs where I'm like, I don't want to be here. I am here to collect the paycheck and to go home.
Right.
Been there. I understand.
Yes.
But when I am in a classroom, when I am working with children, it fills me with so much joy. It fills me with so much joy and happiness, and it clicks and it makes sense. And I probably would have been happy as a doctor as well with all of my money that I would be making as a doctor. I probably would have loved having all my doctor money. But you know what? I'm going to stick here at this community college with these kiddos.
Right, right.
Because this brings me so much joy. But you're so right. The values, connecting with what they value. Is flexibility something that they value?
Right.
So maybe it's a job that they have a lot of time to still do what they want, right? I knew someone who loved surfing and that was just the priority in their life was just, I want to be able to still wake up early and go surfing and spend time at the beach and I want to do that.
Right.
And so it made so much sense that they went into nursing because their schedule allowed for them to still do what they loved and what they were passionate about, which was the surfing part of it. And finding and connecting with what they love and value, that will make their life happier. That'll make your life happier. That'll make your relationship happier.
I think so. I think so.
Yes.
I think so. You know, and like you said, sometimes we have to do jobs that we may not be happy with. But I often find myself when I was in those moments, those were just the gateway to get me to something else. And so I was willing to kind of put up with it or go through it because I knew on the other side, was what I've been working for, what I've been trying to get at, right? So you're right. Yeah. We're going to be in those moments as well. Yeah. And how we see it, the approach that we take can make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And on that note of making a difference, how do you reimagine education?
I'll break this up into two pieces. I think education K through 12 is such a piece of, I'll call it clay, that I think can be reshaped, reimagined, formed, right? Based on the needs of who we serve. That's how I would love it to look like. Higher ed, that I contend, was never intended for the masses. If you look back at the beginnings of higher education, they were developed and intended for white men. Colleges and universities was never, notice I didn't say people of color. They were developed for white men, not the masses. So not white women, not black men, none of those groups. And so the idea of what we do with K-12 and how it connects to higher education, I think is where we often have the disconnect. Think about administrations, presidential administration, what the agenda has been about education. There was at one point, No Child Left Behind. There was whatever was the next flavor of the next president. Depending on the flavor of the president, whoever's running the political system at the time, impacts, I think, how K through 12 is treated and then what feeds into higher education. And I think for at least 100 years, probably longer, the idea for the masses now who now go K-12, right, who's required education, now also looking at public schools, charter schools, private schools, all of those things, I think we're so disconnected and disconnected in a way that's not bad, but disconnected from, I think, about opportunities for students and seeing students as products and not people. They see them as data, outcomes, yada, 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 right? And not these human beings sitting in front of us who aren't empty vessels, I contend, that they aren't there for you to fill them up and put something in because they're empty and they don't possess anything. How dare you? They are these living creatures, beings with intelligence and coming here with their own concepts and thoughts and ideas. And sometimes that means challenging the status quo or leadership or whoever's sitting, the teacher in front, thinking, no, why does it have to be that way? Who says it has to be green? Why can't that be white? And so we're so busy pushing them down this narrow pathway. And I think we're all guilty. All systems, private, public, charter, I don't care. I think we're pushing them down these systems that are trying to feed the higher ed system, right? in a system that doesn't really want you.
Okay. Oh.
So you're once again trying to push a square peg into a round hole. Now, I'm like you. I completely believe in education. I do. But it doesn't always have to look like it looks. What about experimental learning? What about the polytechnical idea where you learn by doing, you know, the Montessori approach? Mm-hmm. I think that educators have got to start looking across the plane at what everybody else is doing and finding out what works. Who cares that we're over here and we're not the Montessori school? But if the Montessori schools are doing something that's working, we need to take that, incorporate that into our public schools.
Yes.
If there's something happening in charter schools that includes parents taking more responsibility in and out of the classroom, we got to be able to cross-pollinate ideas, concepts, theories, pedagogy, curriculum, all of that stuff in order to build these better systems that either allow our students to go into the higher ed system or walk away with some kind of educational training, skill set. Because if the kid says college is not for me, they may be actually on point. It may not be for them, but we owe them something. We owe them some level of skill and ability so that they can take care of themselves and any kind of family that they may create so that they don't become a burden, right? An economic burden to themselves or any other structures, right? That they belong to, family, community. That if we really want a just society, you have to look at issues of equity. I know I'm saying a bad word. Inclusion. I know I'm saying another bad word. And how diverse, right? A bad word, girl.
There's safe words here.
And diverse. And I don't just mean, again, I don't mean diverse in the sense of our physical makeup, but diverse learning styles, diverse concepts of what we're doing, what somebody else is doing. Let's diversify what that looks like in order to build the best and get the best out of our kids.
Yes, yes, yes.
I just feel like I went to a sermon and I just was like bestowed
with so much great information.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I am in awe of just everything you just said, from, you know, students not being just these empty vessels, right? Because I hear that all the time, that we have to pour into them and do all this. Like, that is this banking model of education where it's like, I am the all-seeing, all-knowing entity of the classroom. I know everything. I'm going to pour all of my knowledge now into you. And it's like, so how did you teach them how to learn?
Right.
Right. That's a skill on how to learn, how to find information. If I'm just giving it to you, how am I teaching you how to think critically about this? You don't have to believe everything I tell you. I want you to question me.
That's right. And Brittany, what an arrogant perspective.
Yeah.
That you think you're the end all, be all, know all. That's a pretty arrogant perspective to have. I don't know if you feel this way. I think you probably do, just given the time that we spent together. I am a lifelong learner. I never want to be the smartest person in the room. Never. Mm-hmm. I want to walk into a room and going, okay, what can I learn today? Yeah. What's going to hit me? What's going to allow me to say, wow, didn't know that. That's new information. And so I think that's the approach that I try to take as an educator.
Yeah. And I think there's so much beauty in that. I teach incoming teachers, and that's the one thing that if they take any one thing from my class, which I hope they take more than one thing, but if they take any one thing from my class, is that your role as an educator is to continue your practice of learning, to continue reflect on your practice. You need to be a reflective teacher so that you can best be there for your students, because the students you have in your classroom today are going to be different than the students tomorrow.
Amen.
They'll be different from the students after that. There's going to be new needs and challenges that arise that are going to challenge your skills as an educator. And it's not your job to dig your heels in deeper and say, well, this is what I learned and this is how I'm supposed to do it. No, your job is to be a learner. Your job is to learn how to do things and how to pivot and how to listen to what this new generation of students is telling us, because they see issues, right? Again, going back to that analogy of their fire. If by the time they get to you, they still have some fire left in them, it hasn't been completely doused out of them. Your role is to help them harness that and to help them do that and to help them learn. That's our role. My role, again, is not to sit there and talk down to you and to bestow all this knowledge onto you. I want you to know that you have knowledge that you have acquired. I want to know what that knowledge is. I want to know what you know. And I want to know how I can help you build those tools to learn more and do more. That's our role as educators. That's Amen. What we're supposed to be doing here.
Amen. You know, I just think every day, I haven't been a classroom teacher for a long time, but I'm just listening to you. And I'm just thinking how wonderful it would be to run into my class every day with second graders and say, hey, guys, guess what I learned today? And if your kids ran into the classroom as an educator and said, guess what I learned today, Mrs. Young? And I would say, what? What a powerful tool for engaging and learning every single day, right? Mm-hmm. Guess what I learned? And if you can kind of facilitate that, and that sounds like what you're doing, that's what it's about.
It's what it's about. It's what we're doing here. And again, if you take anything from this podcast, if you take anything from my classes, please continue to learn. Use the continue. The best practices are constantly changing.
Absolutely.
Just be up to date on that. Whether that's reading books, listening to podcasts like this one right here, right now, or watching videos or documentaries, anything that challenges your current way of thinking, anything that exposes you to new ways of thinking, that is going to help you be the best teacher. I feel like I can only keep becoming a better teacher the more that I learn, the more that I grow. And that's the future of education I want to see. I want to see educators educating themselves.
Absolutely. That's it.
Learning
and growing. Absolutely. Learn. And that means sometimes uncomfortable, right? Because if we've been believing certain things and then somehow we get this dissonance, right? And somehow in our spirit, we know, but that means you're growing. That means you're growing.
That means you're learning.
Yes.
Going.
Wow. Hey. And again, modeling it for those young people or those students that you work with every day, Brittany, that's powerful. That's powerful. Yeah.
I love that. And I love this conversation. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, days. This podcast could be several chapters long. I want to say I am just so in awe of you and the work that you do and just everything. And I want to thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast. My audience wants to connect with you. Where can they find you?
Well, let's see. They can email me. I'm pretty accessible. You can reach me at hyoung@elcamino.edu. That's the quick and fast and dirty way of reaching me. You can also reach me at Pipelines to Possibilities. That's my other business, and it's pipelines2possibilities@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out anytime. And then I do have a work email that you're more than welcome to reach out, a personal work line. It's area code 424-294-8520, and happy to take calls or anything, however I can be of service.
Thank you, Dr. Young. Again, I am so excited that our paths also crossed. And
me too.
So happy for this conversation. It has filled me with just so much joy and so much energy. I'm about to walk into my class tomorrow and be like, guess what I learned yesterday?
Again, I'm so very grateful for the opportunity and was just surprised by even the invitation. And you know, you never know who's watching you.
Yeah.
You never know who's watching
you. Very true.
And so it's really important to be the best that you can be, to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's okay to bump your head once, but I think that's an important piece, is to be those mentors and role models out there, even when you don't know who's watching you. So thank you. Mm-hmm. This was amazing. I would love to come back anytime. Please know I consider you a colleague at this point. And thank you for doing this good work.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this good work. This is important work, Brittany. Keep it up.
It is. I look at the news and I'm like, let's keep going.
We got to have positivity out there. Absolutely.
Mm, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, Thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Blessings.
Wow. When I tell you I did not want that conversation to end, I did not want that conversation to end. It was so good. I just wanted to say I'm so grateful for Dr. Young for joining us and sharing all that beautiful wisdom. I know I learned a lot. I hope you took a lot from that. If you want to continue to support the podcast, please like, share, and leave a rating or review. It helps the podcast to find more listeners just like you. Feel free to subscribe on all of the socials, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of the things you can find me on. Let me know what you thought about this episode. Let me know what really stuck with you, what takeaways you're taking from this episode, and how it's going to help you to support you in the classroom or with your own children. And on that note, I will see you next time for more transformative conversations in education.
And until then, navigate your journey with courage and kindness, and I'll see you there for more transformative conversations in education.
Bye.